The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, fellow addicts? This is Shannon, the producer of the SDR show. On today's show, joining Ralph Sutton and guest co-host James Mattern is Aika of the metal cello group Apocalyptica. It's pretty cool to hear the story about how they even arrived at the idea of doing metal music with cellos. Really cool guy, really awesome stories. So enjoy this episode. Also remember, we do the show live every Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. That's absolutely for free. But the best way to support the show is to go to gasdigitalnetwork.com and use promo code SDR. That will give you a 1 week free trial, which gives you access to every episode of the SDR show we've ever done, as well as every show on the entire Gas Digital Network, live chat, episode sooner, high def stream, so many good perks, all for free for 1 week and risk-free. So here it is right now, the Aika from Apocalyptica episode of the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's fart, you need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again in his zoot suit with his matching t-shirt and cover of his microphone for some reason, James Mattern.
You're accidental. I want to wear blue today. I want to wear a little Amoeba music. Want to support.
Fair enough. Fine. I'll tell you the story here. Ready? This band we almost had in studio, I'm going to say 3 months ago. And I've loved this band since fucking 1996 when they first came out, right? But here's the story, and I can't wait to get it from the source, what actually happened. We were going to have them in studio. We moved the time from 3 p.m. They asked if we could do 10 a.m. I couldn't do 10 a.m. And then at 10 a.m., they showed up at the studio and just met Shannon and no one else. It is Aika from Apocalyptica. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So what happened that day? Let's just start what happened that day. Like, you know, you came to the studios very early in the morning, but we switched. Like, what happened was it was booked for 3, and then I think sound check was moved to 3, so you couldn't do it. And then they asked me, could I do 10 a.m.? I said, I can't do 10. Let me know any other day or time. And then the next day, I know you guys showed up at 10 a.m. Did somebody get fired?
Yeah, not really. I think it was more that it was Monday morning, and our management is in Europe, and the communication during over the weekend went pretty slow, obviously. And, and we got a confirmation from Europe that, okay, 10 a.m. is fine. And guys were there, and suddenly it was like nobody of you obviously didn't hear about it because it was Sunday and whatsoever and early morning. So
yeah,
and then we messed up.
But it was you guys took it in stride, which I give you credit. I don't know if it was you that I spoke to on the phone, but you guys said, yeah, it was a nice walk over, so we'll just walk back and no big deal. Like, it was very nice that you guys handled it that way.
Did you just have breakfast with Shannon? Did you just bring her a bagel and hang out for an hour? What'd you do?
No, actually, I'm not also not 10 a.m. guys. 10 a.m. guys, so I was not coming there. Oh. I was like, if it's in afternoon, I'm in, you know, but if it's early morning.
No, okay, it's funny. Yeah, it really made me laugh. Okay, so now I want to go to, we'll start, I know we have a new single out and everything else, but I want to start at the beginning, okay? I just want to figure out, I know that you started playing like at 9 years old and you and your sister would record for your family like Christmas tunes and cello and stuff, and that's wild. But the question is, we'll get into that, but where do we come up with this idea? I was like, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get 4 cello players together and we're going to do Metallica covers and this is going to be awesome. How did that start? Because it sounds like on paper, a terrible idea, but I fucking loved it since day one. So how did that happen?
Actually, yeah, you know, I played cello because I wanted to play something, some instrument, and cello was a coincidental choice for me. And I actually got into classical music at the age of 13. The very same age as actually I found Metallica. And I was, before that, I was a big fan of Jimi Hendrix and Billy Idol and stuff, even Duran Duran and stuff like that. And so I was a big metal fan. I also loved the classical music. And we had on my cello class at Sibelius Academy, the University of Music in Helsinki, where I studied later. We had this kind of six cello group, and we were playing all kind of stuff with that, up to Jimi Hendrix Purple Haze was the kind of hardest stuff we did. And I started seeing, okay, if we can play Purple Haze, why couldn't we play For Whom the Bell Tolls? And then I started to do the arrangements. I made a couple of arrangements. We played in this kind of evening party of this youth orchestra summer camp, just for our friends, you know, fully acoustic, and just for our own fun, basically, and entertain our friends. And it took 3 years from that before we actually were asked to play a full album. Because end of 95, we played first time in the front of metal crowd. And the crowd was freaking out, stage diving, everything. We played like 20 minute set of Metallica among a couple of other metal bands. And after that, we got a call from the guy who was running independent label in Helsinki. And he was asking, would you like to make an album? And actually, our first reaction was like, are you kidding us? Who would like to listen to this kind of shit from the record? And, but as he seemed to be serious, we were thinking, okay, we can do that for, let's do it for experience. Sounds really exciting. And then we did the first album, released the first album in May 96. We were expecting to sell 1,000 copies and get a couple of gigs. And we were thinking that would be cool. And then as our big surprise, people like you were like, oh, this is fucking awesome, you know? And that's how it started.
So just so you know, I mean, it's amazing because you guys got together almost 30 years ago. That album came out like 26 years ago, something like that. But for me, I was running a rock radio show at the time. And there's a thing in radio called talk beds where you play music while you're talking, like in the background. So we would constantly play all the Metallica cello music while we were talking. And the amount of people that would call in and be like, what the fuck are you guys playing? Like, where do you get that? And it's like, we probably sold, you know, a couple of hundred records, if not a few thousand, just by playing it as talk beds, because everyone was so hypnotized by it. It was so fucking different at the time. And you guys somehow made, which I don't think anyone's ever said this before then, cello mute playing cool. Like playing the cello became cool all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's what seemed to happen. And we were not really thinking about it because for us, it was the most natural thing to do, you know, to play music we love with the instruments we can play. So it was as simple as that. And that's why we were super surprised that it turned out to be something revolutionary and changed actually the musical world a lot.
Right. James, you look like you're dying to say something.
I just think it's the most metal thing. I know you go, it just seems like a bad idea. It's the greatest idea ever. It's like how we take Metallica and metal covers and we shred with fucking cello. That's the great.
It's wild. And it's also wild to see live. They're so into it. It's really interesting. And it all started with you and your sister at 9 years old playing for the family, which is adorable. My question with that is, do you still have any of those tapes that you would record? And why not release them as bonus tracks?
I guess my parents might have all of those. You know, we had this tradition. I'm from a family of five children. And we, at that some time when we were kids, we all were playing. So it was a Christmas tradition to make always a C cassette for grandparents as a Christmas present. And then we had this kind of Christmas concert in Christmas Eve. And I'm pretty sure that my dad... or mom has all those recordings. I haven't heard them back.
You should release those. That would be cool as shit. Why wouldn't you do that? It's fucking awesome.
And did you do like Creeping Death in front of like grandparents? I would love footage of happy birthday, baby Jesus. We love you. Let's have some pudding in a few minutes. But here's some here's Battery and Creeping Death, grandparents. Have fun. I hope you bought me something better than a goddamn sweater.
When you guys, cool, the group that first got together, were you all metalheads or did you have to find metal fan cello players or were you all just, you know, that original group that first put it together? Did you lose a couple of guys that were like, well, fuck metal, I'm not doing that?
Actually, we were just, you know, really good friends in general. And we like to hang out anyway. And we were sharing the interest of different levels to metal. I was probably the most metalhead of us. I was only one at Sibelius Academy wearing Metallica shirts and, you know, broken jeans and shit like that when other guys were more casual. But anyway, everybody was into the music. But actually, from the original lineup of the second album, before the third album, called Antero, left the band because he was not really into the metal world, and he wanted to focus on the classical stuff.
Did
more.
You call him? Did you call him a puss when he did that? No.
No. We were just at that time. We were just happy to get rid of him. But actually, okay. To be honest, he's been back for many, many years later on as a touring musician. Being the fourth cello player. Because nowadays we are three cellos and drums, and like. 4 or 5 years ago, we made this 20th anniversary tour for this first album, Plays Metallica, by four cellos. So we had to get the fourth cellist in, and Andro was actually the guy to call.
Oh, that's
so
cool. That's really cool.
He loves the stuff, but, you know, he was probably in some identity crisis on that time. And, you know how life goes.
So the first album was all Metallica. Second album had some other metal covers, and then you started creeping in originals, right? But the question for me is, it took a little while, then you started bringing in vocalists, right? So that's, I think, when the band started to, at least from American standards, started to explode. When you started to bring in vocalists. Yeah. I was actually in Finland and heard the I'm Not Jesus on TV. It was on playing constantly on the, like, whatever, MTV Finland or whatever the fuck it was. And I was like, what the hell is this? I didn't know what that was. It wasn't big in New York yet or in America yet. But that's what escalated Apocalyptica to a whole other level, getting guys like Adam from 3 Days Grace and getting Corey Taylor and getting, I mean, over the years, so many people. Whose idea was that to start doing it, incorporating vocalists?
I think it was a very natural development because when we did the first album called with instrumental music, our own one, own stuff, and before that, we were featuring on so many other bands' albums. And then we were thinking, okay, now when we have, why not to do it all the way around? And we invite somebody into our world. And the first vocal song we ever recorded was Path Volume 2 with a German singer, Sandra Nasic, from the German band Guana Apes, which was pretty big on those times. And as we enjoyed the transition from having, you know, released the original instrumental thing and then figuring out how it would sound with the vocals. And then that's why we kept doing it. And all the time kind of, I wouldn't say level up, but kind of find a new angle to it. Sometimes we wrote together, sometimes I wrote the song together with the singer. Sometimes we had a song and we just sent it out to the guys. We were like, oh, Corey would be perfect to sing this song. Like, for example, with Corey, like, I went to see a show in London. When he was playing with Stone Sour. And after the show, I had a CD for him, two demos. I had I'm Not Jesus and I Don't Care.
Like, oh, really? And he chose chose I'm Not Jesus.
And I was like, whatever, you know, you can pick up if you want to do a song. You can choose what you want to do. And he picked up I'm Not Jesus.
And that's a really, by the way, if you don't know the song, it's a dark song. It's about like sexual abuse from priests and shit. But it's definitely a great song. And both, I mean, I think I Don't Care might have been the biggest hit from that record, right? That was a huge song. It was also, I remember fucking being happy when I saw it on I used to watch Smallville because I'm light in the shoes, James. And it was in Smallville, which was huge at the time. But you've had so many people like Gavin Rossdale and
the fucking shoes.
You had Doug of Hoobastank, Brent from Shinedown, both have been on the show not that long ago. Are there people that you reached out to that said no? Are there people that you reached out to that you didn't like what they did? Had any of those type of things happened?
Yeah, did you not record a song with someone because they love Smallville? And you're like, you're too light in the shoes to be in our cello shredding metal fucking group, you beta. Go hang out in a band with that plays violins to hip hop songs, you son of a bitch.
I think all the collaborations have turned out pretty great because we've been only willing to work with great people that we kind of appreciate their art and find their way of approaching music exciting or some that they have special character. So I think that therefore every collaboration has turned out pretty good. But of course we have reached out a long time in the past, many people. I remember like one time I was really obsessed in the beginning of 2000 somewhere to get Björk to make a song with us because I was a huge fan of hers. And I thought that she's so original and exciting. Even she's not metal at all, but we could create something that would be a great hybrid. And but she wasn't up for it at least on those times. I think Tori Amos, we've been also reaching out at some point. But actually, to be honest, I feel that we are kind of lucky bastards because usually people, they would love to make a song with us. Yeah. And as they find the band so interesting, but then many proposals, they kind of crash down due to different kind of technical, logistical timing problems and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's always the battle of the release timing, and the people who have their own thing coming out, they don't want to collide with another single they do with a different artist.
Right.
They can't go to radio, for example, with the, you know, I have like with Shinedown happened that we were about to release the Not Strong Enough, which probably could have been huge in the radio in America. But suddenly Shinedown was releasing their single number 7 from that album, old album. And nobody see the coming like 2 years earlier when we were planning everything.
Right.
No, guys, you can't go to the radio in America with this song because we are just pushing out one more song there.
Oh, that fucking sucks.
And we're like, what the fuck can we do? And then we went through like tons of singers and reaching out. And then we got the singer from Hoobastank to make a new version. But then we ran 3 months late.
Right.
And kind of the momentum went there and so on, so on, so on. So there's a... always, it's a huge puzzle to get all the aspects together.
Right,
sometimes
I'd imagine.
The managements are foxy, you know, they just say that, you know, you pay $100,000 and then we can talk. We're like, go fuck yourself, you know, we are not buying anybody to work with us, you know, we kind of work only with people who want to work with us.
Yeah, it's funny, by the way, that it's happened on this show and on my old radio show where bands wouldn't come on and I'd be like, well, fuck that band. They were right here, they didn't. And then you find out years later, the band had no idea. It was just management is like, oh, no, they won't do it. And that's more often than not. We also had the singer, the Rasmus, on. And I remember this is like right in the beginning of the pandemic when he had that song Venomous Moon with you guys were on it. And that was a great collaboration along with another great Finnish guy. You had one with Villavalo, who is one of my favorite singers of all time. Those are great that you're able to get that Finnish love together, that those collaborations happen.
Yeah, that was cool when we did Bittersweet. 2005, and my idea was that okay, we had done the song with Nina Hagen and many different international singers, and I was like thinking that would be nice to create something from the scratch together with some cool people. And as Will and Lauri, they were both my friends. I reached out both of them actually to make different songs, and then Will was like, when I told him that Lauri is also on board, and he was like, what about should we do something together and make a man duet? But there are not really existing too many of those. And then we started to create the song. And so it was really like an organic process from very beginning to the end.
That's super very cool. Yes, James?
Yeah, I just think he's the coolest human being we've ever had on this show. You're smooth, the good hair. You can say fuck and it just sounds like chill.
Sounds classy.
Also, if I had, I was thinking about this when you brought up like singers you want. If I ever got Zuckerberg money and I was on my deathbed and they were like, you're going to die. I would pay whatever it took to get you guys in my hospital room with Tori Amos. That's how the fuck I'm meeting the maker, whatever.
Oh, yes.
I would pay whatever. I'd give you stock
what
and Facebook.
What if instead of Tori Amos, it's me in a wig? Would you be okay with that?
Baby, you can't sing Me in a Gun. You can't sing that, baby. I love you to death. You can't do Crucify. I would. Yeah. You guys do.
You've never heard me try that, James. You don't know that for sure.
Well, my birthday's in a few months. Let's fucking get it ready, everybody. Can you fly in?
Yes.
Let's go.
Yes.
I'll get you on the jet with this imaginary money I don't have.
All right, before we go any further, one of our other longtime sponsors right now, it is rockauto.com. So if you're an auto mechanic, a super cool do-it-yourself guy, or just someone who works on their own car, I do know they've been in the business for 20 years, and they make it easy to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order parts or don't know exactly what you're looking for, or you perusing a store forever and then finding out they don't have the right size, the right make, the right this, the right that. Just go to rockauto.com. They have everything you could possibly need for your car, and you're going to have fun looking while you do it. Rockauto.com, they are so confident in their pricing, they don't even have a discount code. That's how sure they are that they know their prices can't be beat. They are the one-stop shop for everything auto parts. It is rockauto.com. But when you do purchase something at rockauto.com, let them know where you heard about it. The SDR show. Rockauto.com. Let's get back into it. Okay, let me ask you this. In 2011, when you guys played, when you did the 30th anniversary with Metallica, was that the first time you met those guys, or had you met them a few times over the years?
Actually, it's a little bit ridiculous. In 96, after we released the album, so probably the fifth show after the album release was opening for Metallica in Helsinki for two nights. So
oh, I didn't know that. That's
awesome.
The first
time we met them. Yeah.
Wow.
So we opened them, their show 96 November.
That's crazy.
And, dope.
And those guys were huge fans of us, and they really loved our stuff. And we played shows now and then in different places with them. So we became over the years very good friends, and we are pretty. I'm pretty close friends with Lars, and I was actually playing at his wedding.
Wow!
Like what, five years ago, I played by myself alone. I played the whole ceremony music.
Did you play "Here Comes the Bride" on cello for him?
No, I played something else. You know, for the walking music.
But, all right, now just to jump a little further on the eighth record, when you did the one with Frankie Perez, who's in the new single that came out too. He's been away for a while, came back. How did you make, first of all, he's from Vegas. How did you find him? And secondly, how was that decision to say, okay, now we're just going to have one singer for the whole record. Fuck everybody else. Like, how did that decision come about?
It came because we were getting so much in trouble with different collaborations, kind of the logistics around that. And
yeah,
we got
makes
so
touring
many
hard.
Yeah, and also the Words Collide album and the Seventh Symphony album both had some very unpleasant coincidences what it came to work out the songs, the singles. But so we were like, okay, we don't want to have this insane hassle. We don't want to go into the studio not knowing which songs are going to happen. Because every time it was like, okay, we go to the studio, we have this bunch of songs and we are going to do this. And this singer is confirmed that this is still thinking, you know, and we are waiting for the reply. And then we've been 2 months in the studio and we're like, okay, is this song going to happen or not? And so it's a very not unfocused, but not the best way to work. So we were like, okay, we need to fix two dilemmas to kind of really make it really solid and also to connect it better with touring. And then we're thinking, okay, we need to search for a singer. So we put out this kind of quiet audition thing inside the business only. Kind of started to search people who are probably on hiatus from their own band or somebody who would join us for the one album circle, which is like album production and then probably 2 years of touring with that. And then we found Frankie stood out from the options we found.
And I guess you did the one album, but you must like him enough that the new single, which is I'll Get Through It, which also features fucking Geezer Butler, you brought him back to sing it. So obviously it's not like it ended on bad terms. You're still friends with the guy.
Definitely. Well, Frank is an amazing guy. And the more time has passed, he kind of fits so well in the live situation. And so actually, when we stopped with Frank, the reason was that we went into this place, Metallica, by four cellos mode, and that concept was fully instrumental. And then we wanted to release fully instrumental album, Cell Zero.
Right, Cell Zero.
So there was, we had like 5 years almost that we had no, or 4 years, we had no use for singer.
Right.
And now when we were touring America now, we had Frankie, and Frankie's coming on the tour to sing with us. The whole September
and does he
tour
sing other well. Hit like he'll sing I Don't Care, he'll sing I'm Not Jesus, he'll sing the other songs too?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, that's
sure.
Cool. So now this is my question. Cell Zero, which came out in 2020, fully instrumental, right? And first time since I think 2003 that you did a fully instrumental record. When you do that, there's pretty much no chance of a single coming out, or at least charting. I mean, that's probably not gonna happen, right? So do you look at the music on those albums entirely differently because you know there's no singles in those records? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, actually, at least there is less compromises. when you try to squeeze in the same package vocal songs which start to get a little bit radio driven. You mm-hmm. know, the kind of the songwriting approach has been already kind of to have a smashing song, and then some progressive, insane, weird, never heard before instrumental shit. And so now it was really like, we went to studio, we didn't have even producer. When we did this Blaze Metallica thing, it was very exciting to go back into our roots, but with the 20 years of experience. When we uh-huh. did the first album and started, we had no clue what to do, you know, with just uh-huh. experience. And then 20 years of experience playing those same songs, actually, this is super fun. And now it would be interesting to see what we can do with the same perspective to apocalyptic music, you know,
right.
referring to the third album, Cult, which was the first instrumental with original. So it was just, I felt so tempting to kind of to do whatever we want. We were out of record deals. Nobody was trying to tell us what to do. We mm-hmm. kind of literally locked ourselves in the studio with one recording engineer and gave a flying fuck, you know, what people think. And so it was kind of hard work in a way. And also the one thing is that during the digital times, we realized that we can release vocal songs, collaborations whenever we
right.
want.
That's and what I love. I love that.
And then it's easier, you know, to make sure that the timing with the singer to do the promotion, you know, to make the videos and the release time is good for everybody. It's not tied into the album schedule, because then right. everything, you know, you have to plan so much upfront. Like, for example, if I give you an example, that releasing album like Verse Collide, then mm-hmm. we have the first single coming out before the album comes out. Then we work the... want to work the second single, but the timing is already 1.5 years later than actual all the things have been scheduled and planned, and many things have changed during
right,
that 1.5 years, and everything is suddenly off track. So it's been so frustrating to lose great songs, kind of the tools to work the great songs,
right?
And then we're like, okay, we can do it song by song. It doesn't really matter. We don't need to have a single to sell album because nobody buys album anyway.
Right. So that's good. Then you guys matter. Also, you release the song with Lizzie Hale and you release the song with Jacoby. Like, you're just letting things come out when they're come out, yeah. which is, you know, Jacoby's also been on the show, but, you know, it's cool that the digital age allows you to do that, that you don't have to worry so much about that album tour album cycle anymore.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people, they just, when the world started to change in the industry, a lot of people just, they put all the brakes on and started to cry. And I was like thinking, like, you know, it's evolvement and you need to figure out what the good things you can find out of it. And that I found really positive thing, that you actually get more freedom. You right. don't need to be on the leash of labels. You don't need to.
Well, you're also, though, you guys have a built-in.
Please, too many people. Yeah.
You also have a built-in audience doing this for almost 30 years. So I think a new band might have a harder time doing that, you know? So it's easier when you know you have, you know, what did you sell? I think over 4 million records already. So you have like it's built-in audience. It's harder, I think, mm-hmm. for some new guy that's putting out a record to do that. But, you know, it is great that you guys have that freedom yeah. to do that. Do you think you have more metal fans or cello classical music fans in the grand scheme of things?
That is very hard to say, because the statistics are always partly reliable and partly not reliable. You know, if you check Spotify or Apple Music statistics,
right.
what's the gender, what's the age group, and so on. And also the live shows, in our case, they are not always a good reference, because when we play in the concert hall, classical concert venue, then it's like probably 70% of the audience is this regular concert hall goers.
Right.
And but when we play a rock club, the majority is metal people. But I think, and we have fans of all ages, like from right. kids to grandparents, you know, we have these 90 years old people, you know, digging on the shows. And like we played last autumn, we played in Finland, we played a church tour. We played 16 churches. And we made a special program for that.
That's
and that
cool.
was like full of those grandmas. we were like wondering, where the fuck are they coming from? You know, how do they want to buy a ticket for this kind of thing? And they loved it. So it's very, it's very hard to define who is Apocalyptic fan.
By the way, I'm surprised, not that you should follow in their footsteps, but I'm surprised you guys haven't done like a Christmas metal record, a Christmas cello record at this point. I know they're, what's that group? I can't think of their name right now. But
Mannheim.
Trans-Siberian. Trans-Siberian. Yeah, so maybe it's two. But here's a real important question between you, and I'm going to fuck up their name. They think it's Pavo and Pertu. I'm saying their names wrong, right? But
well done.
Oh, really? Okay, well, who's the best cello player of the three of you? Be honest.
I think Pertu is the best, you know, as in the traditional kind of meaning. He has an amazing sound, and he's super skillful. But when it comes to riff playing and rhythmical, that kind of stuff, I'm probably the best. So we have our own strengths, and that's how we kind of we try to use the best out of everybody's best sides.
That's cool.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, so now the last thing before we get into the first, something that became very near and dear to my heart this year, and apparently it's a big thing in Finland, so much so that Apocalyptica has their own fucking coffee. They not only have their own tea, they have their own coffee. And you said somewhere that Finnish people drink more coffee than any other country. Is that right?
That is very right.
That seems bizarre to me.
Yeah, I have no idea why, because we are the furthest you can get where the coffee grows, you know. Uh-huh. But that's clearly, like, really clearly. I think Norway is second, and then all the other countries are far.
That's
behind.
Fucking weird that that's the case.
So what's the stats say? Cups? Because I get shit. People are like, how many cups a day do you drink? Enough. That's what I drink. Are you like over 4 cups a day? What's the average?
I don't know. It's not counted like that. It's kilograms. You know, if you can try and kind of what it's called. You know, change them into pounds or whatever you use.
Goddamn metric system. I think it's
whatever as dumb Americans Finnish people, use.
Finnish people, they consume. If I remember right, it's over 12 kilos. So it's like 25 pounds of raw coffee per person a year.
A year. Wow. I was like, a like, day? Yo, man, I got some issues. I'm pounding 2 kilos of coffee a day.
I wonder what the United States is. If you're 25 pounds, is the United States like 10 pounds? I wonder what that is. I have no idea. But how did you guys decide to put out coffee? Did a coffee company approach you, or did you guys say we should do this?
I think Pavo just found it out. Probably, I think it was his some friend who was running this small roastery, and they started to kind of put it together. So it's our coffee and our tea. Those are more this kind of thing that we like. They're cool because they're really good quality, and they're kind of handcrafted things. So they are nothing to make money. So we are not really making any money. We think it's a cool fan service.
By the way, our producer,
we always want to offer good quality, you know.
Our producer Shannon just wrote that the average United States person only does about 9.7 pounds of coffee. So you guys are killing us in the coffee consumption.
Yes.
Not bad. Not bad.
I don't
bad
know.
At all.
Should I be proud about it or what? But you know.
Yeah.
Stay up for a while. Stay up. Who needs
to
nap?
Do you actually drink your own Apocalyptica coffee? Do you make that for yourself in the morning?
I used to. Now I'm stuck in this kind of ready capsule machine. So having a small kitchen, I don't have too much space for many devices. So it's a great coffee. I tried them all.
Can you get it in the United States, or is it only in Finland?
I think it can be shipped, you know, from the roastery web stop shop or Apocalyptica shop. You can order it wherever.
All right. Well, that's cool. I'm going to try some Apocalyptica coffee in my fancy brewer, James.
I think it'd be nice.
Yes.
Why not? Okay. So what were we going to say, James? I'm sorry.
Can I do one? Can I go backwards for just 2 seconds? Because you're talking about the audience. So when you play a concert hall or like a church and it's mostly classical music fans, is it, do you ever look in the row and you see a bunch of nice people in suits and they work in finance and they drink tea with the pinkies out next to someone like in a fucking Cannibal Corpse shirt? Is your audience ever like mixed like that?
What happens?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's mixed like that.
Spectacular. Yeah. I love you.
And
more.
It's so cool. You know what? What we love to do also, sometimes we have played, very often we play these kind of cultural festivals and they have nothing even remotely close to metal or even rock, you know, like these arty farty things. And that audience is really very fresh for us. It's super enjoyable to go there, kind of offer them a good platform to dive in. And when they are deep enough, then take them like this and fucking shake the shit out of them. And it's so much fun because they love it. You know, they've been listening punk when they were kids or something.
Right. You're bringing out their inner child. Yeah. Why
exactly.
Not?
It's just a matter of finding the way how to, you know, pull it out.
What do you do to them again? Can you do it one more time? That was the greatest thing I've seen in a long time. I love it. I love it.
All right. So, James, we got to do the first now. We're going to wrap it up. So, we're going to hit the first, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw Concert Detroit had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time about their first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We start with rock and roll and we meet the first concert you went to, but I have a feeling it's going to be some weird Finnish band we've never fucking heard of.
I think it'll be weird, actually, bro.
I'm a little bit boring on this because the first rock and roll show, rock show I went was Metallica in Helsinki. 91.
Oh, really? How old were you?
I was 16.
Wow. So that at that point, you hadn't had the idea yet to make the Metallica cover cello record, but that were you playing cello? You were playing cello at that point. So
yeah,
maybe,
I was playing cello. Yeah.
So maybe that show was what inspired you to do it.
Very much the reason, you know, the main reason was that I loved the music. Just loved the music. It was biggest music for me on those at that age.
That's cool. That's really
good. It's like I lived in the suburb, and as I said, I'm from the big family, so I didn't have a chance. I didn't have money to go concerts, you know. They were happening in Helsinki, and I was living lived out. So, and where I lived, there was no music.
No, but that's a good one. That's a fucking cool one.
So that's why I was six, pretty old when I got the first.
No, I like that one. All right, so now, what about the first drug you ever did, except after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug?
I haven't actually taken any drugs.
Nothing ever.
No.
Just kilos of coffee, bro.
Yeah, he's so hopped up on coffee. Why not?
Yeah, I tried weed, but I always felt that it doesn't really suit me. Mm-hmm. And I've used tons of alcohol in my life, but I quit that over 3 years ago because I kind of had my dose of that. Uh-huh. And other drugs, I've been just too suspicious about. I grew up in the suburb that it was in the Finnish scale, which is not very tough comparing to America. But anyway, it was there was a lot of trouble with that. And I saw a lot of people going down when I was really young. And I was like thinking always better to stay out of that. And I was always was scared of cocaine that, okay, I probably would get too obsessed with that. So it's better that I don't even give it a try. So
right, I'll allow it.
Enough. I was always like thinking alcohol. I have enough to do with that.
By the way, I'm the same. I'm the same exact way. I barely do anything else. I just drink, and I barely drink at this point in my life.
Yeah.
I'm too old.
And to be honest, the alcohol is probably the second most dangerous drug in the world.
Yeah, probably. All right. Now, then, your first time you had sex.
First time I had sex. if we are talking about penetration as a kind
talking
of
about this. We're talking about this.
Sex. Yes.
No, okay,
yes.
I didn't talk about this.
I was also really old, relatively old. I think I was 17.
That's pretty average. That's not old. That's average.
Because I was always, I kind of was so appreciative towards girls. I always hanged out with the girls. And I was, you know, when I was young, I spent a lot of time at the horse stables with basically only girls beside me.
Oh, and I thought you were going to tell us that the first time you had sex was with a horse.
Nah, luckily not.
Yeah, so that would be really metal. Really fucking metal.
But then I suddenly, when I was 17, turning 18, I was like, what the fuck? Fuck this. And then I was in Finland somewhere in the music camp, and I had sex with two different girls in the same night, different times.
That's a nice start.
Throwing it out. I was throwing it out of the bucket. You know, I was holding it for some reason. I'm like, fuck this.
So you went from not having sex to landing two girls in the same night the first time you had sex. Is that right?
Yes.
That's fucking cool. I like that story. That makes me happy.
I mean, it's pretty cool. Not quite as metal as sleeping with a horse to lose your virginity, but we'll accept it.
Last question. In the video for I'll Get Through It with Geezer, is he actually in the shoot or did you splice him in?
He's in the shoot, but you know, due to the conditions or because of the COVID thing, we had to actually shoot us in separate locations. And
okay. Yeah, I mean, it was him, but it looked like it. Okay, yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah, but yeah. He was in the shoot. Really into the song, and originally when Frankie actually brought the song into us, and he was like, "Yeah, we have the Geezer, we have this song, and we'd be great to do with you," and you know, so he was on board from the very beginning before already we were on board.
All right, that's great. That's cool. All right, so now it's at Apocalyptica Official on Instagram or apocalyptica.com. to find all the dates and all the information. The newest single that I've heard, I don't know if there's something since that, is I'll Get Through It with their last singer, Frankie, and Geezer Butler of Black Sabbath. Is there anything else newer?
I can add, there is going to be a new song tomorrow.
Oh,
it's a classical cover. It's a classical cover, and it's pretty badass.
Didn't you do a Wagner thing like 10 years ago also, right? Were you guys...
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, that was this kind of spectacular, big arena production about Richard Wagner's life. Mm-hmm. And then we released 2000, we made Edvard Grieg Hall of the Mountain King. But since that, we actually have not recorded anything classical except now. Tomorrow is going to be
out. Something's going to come out. That's a new classical cover from Apocalyptica. Very cool. Anything else you want to plug before we do plugs around the room?
No, just that, you know, if the majority of podcast listeners are in America, check out the tour dates because we are coming to make a proper tour in September.
Oh, I would love to see you. I haven't seen you. I saw you guys once years ago. I'd love to see you again. Hopefully you come to New York. That would be great.
Yeah, we come to the area. We played New York last month, but it's somewhere. I think we play New Jersey or something.
Okay. Yeah, I know you were here last month.
Yeah.
You guys showed up at our studio. We weren't there. James, your plugs.
The James Madden on Instagram and the YouTube channel. Get to my YouTube channel because right now, Hotter Than Fish Grease, the Check Spot comedy experiment special / documentary. Me doing stand-up, answering questions from a drunk audience, the worst part of the comedy show, the check drop when everyone's paying their bills. It is chaos. It's in black and white. It is different. It is raw. You see me struggling. I get booed. I win them back. It's fucking wild. The Check Spot. Get it. Share it. Live the life, baby.
Yeah,
and
tonight he's doing, while we're recording this, is him doing his record release party, and I'm too old. I'm not going. It starts too late for me.
You'd be, if you walked in tonight, Ralph, I will be sleeping.
Shannon, your plug.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, musicians, comedians, porn stars, reality TV stars, and they tell their own personal stories about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, now I think is an easy one, but the question is, now don't give us any indication, Ika, if you believe in this, but do we think that he believes in ghosts or not? I'm going to say no, James.
And I'm also going to do the sports book -350 for no. I'm going to go with no.
And Shannon, yes or no?
So I'm just going to be a contrarian. I'm going to pick opposite of you guys, though I think I'm wrong, and I'll say yes.
Okay. Do you believe in ghosts?
Yeah. Sure, I do.
You do?
Yes.
Wow. You lost all kinds of money, Ralph.
God yes. damn it.
I got to take this jacket off. I lost the jacket.
Have you had any supernatural experiences?
Yeah, plenty.
Really?
Oh God.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get on. Oh, my goodness.
Shannon?
I'm so excited.
Do you want to throw one out there to make Shannon happy? Do you have one that you want to share with us?
No. It's nothing comes to my mind that it's kind of exciting in that way. So.
Okay, well, I'll appreciate it. Okay, so we add a song every week to our playlist. We're going to add, I'll get through it because just I don't know what the other one's coming out. But follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness called Good Sugar comes out every Monday. And our store is opening, was going to be in July, but now it's probably going to be September, if I'm being honest. But the store is opening on 3rd and 69th Street. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been a fan for years. And we'll see everyone next time on the SDR show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks.
Great pleasure.
Out on my own, out of my mind, I am barely breathing. Cold and alone, tumbling through time. Life is lost its meaning. The world that I built has crumbled at my feet. But I'm gonna be fine. Don't worry about me.
It's only gonna take a lifetime. You've been listening to the SDR Show.